Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dan. I am the Community Manager and Content Creator here at Living Sober. And today I'm joined by my friend, Tommy Livingston. Now, Tommy is a husband, he's a son, friend, he's an uncle, a writer, a counsellor, a runner sometimes, and he is sober. Welcome, Tommy.
Kia ora, Lotta. Thanks for having me.
Kia ora, and thank you for getting up early on a Saturday morning to do this.
Only for you.
That's right. Only for me and the people at Living Sober who really enjoy these chats and hearing about that people's, you know, journey, to use that cliched word, road to recovery and removal of alcohol. So tell us a little bit about your story. What led to you giving up drinking? What was your relationship with alcohol like?
Yeah, I've been reflecting on this, knowing that this chat was coming up. And I suppose for me, the story does begin quite young, when I was a teenager growing up in rural New Zealand. And, you know, that was when my first sort of experiences of alcohol were in woolshed parties on farms. And I remember quite vividly, sort of, I suppose, after one of these parties, talking to some friends at school. And I felt really unsettled by the way alcohol made me feel when I drank it. And I knew that, you know, everyone was drinking too much, you know, and being silly, but I just had the sense that my experience was different to other people's. And I said to my friends, you know, I think that there's something different that happens when I drink compared to when you guys drink. And they, you know, they thought I was crazy, you know, this being sort of dramatic and emotional, you know.
What age were you then?
I would have been about 16 or 17. So I had a quite early on this inkling that when I drank alcohol, it sort of just did something. It put me into a different space that was sometimes really good. But I think what scared me was I knew that I didn't really have control, you know, when I was drinking. It sort of was always, you know, one was never really felt like enough. And so, you know, I sort of matured. I went to university. I studied journalism and then got a job as a reporter. And I think throughout that time, I probably had a similar experience with alcohol as a lot of young Kiwis, just trying to navigate moving from school into university, then into the workforce. And I think for me, the story with alcohol is not so much for me a story of excess, it is a story of control. So it wasn't, when I look back, like I was drinking, you know, every single day or even every weekend. It was more that when I did drink, I felt like there was this battle where it was always saying to me, have another, you know, and I just really didn't like that.
So hang on, before, can we just go back to that initial feeling you had when you were a young man of feeling unsettled was the word you used. And I get that feeling of that pull, like I want more, but what else was going on internally for you that made you feel unsettled, do you think?
Felt like almost like I had an energy sort of when I drank alcohol sort of pulsating throughout me, you know, like it sort of, it just did something to me that I thought, I don't think this is the experience of other people. You know, when I talk to my friends and say, do you feel like this when you drink? You know, do you feel like, you know, they've got this energy and this sort of, yeah, like it sort of almost like your world opens up in a quite a threatening way.
And so not a pleasant energy.
Not always pleasant, no. Sometimes it was nice to take the edge off things, you know, but it actually, for me, it felt really uncomfortable because it came back to this idea of like I just knew that I didn't have control and it was putting me in this different space, which was, you know, at times, like I say, it was enjoyable, but a lot of the time it was a bit scary, you know.
But yet you kept on drinking through those early 20s or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's just the way we do things around here, or
I don't even think the idea of sobriety crossed my mind. It wasn't an option. I didn't know anyone that didn't drink, you know. That was just that seemed nuts to me. And so yeah, I continued to drink, and I think as I sort of matured, what tended to happen was I would always be in this constant what felt like a battle of moderation. So although I wasn't drinking a huge amount, when I did drink, I would have to put in a lot of energy to try and hold myself back. And I got quite good at that, of trying to hold myself back. But often what would happen is there would be these periodic sort of blowouts, and I would drink too much. And that would be really upsetting for me, because I was, that's not how I actually wanted to live. And often I would say things, or, you know, you just have that anxiety the next day where you're like, oh, this isn't actually the person that I want to be. Mm. So then I would
What you're articulating so brilliantly is that inside conflict. And, you know, so often we look for the outward markers of a problem. You're not coping with life. You're crashing your car, or you're just the guy that's always blotto in the corner at parties. But for you, the impacts were really internal, but no less dramatic because of that internal struggle. It sounds like a huge amount of effort you were having to make to control this liquid constantly and not feeling good about it. And yet, the madness of the world we live in still consuming.
That's right. And I think that was probably one of the reasons why it was tricky for me to come to a conclusion that alcohol was a problem, because we have these ideas around what a problem drinker looks and sounds like. And, you know, I suppose a heaving recycling bin every Wednesday morning is one of those things, right? And that wasn't me. So every time I sort of did begin to consider, is this an issue you need to think about, I would sort of always come to the conclusion, well, you know, I haven't hit some kind of crazy rock bottom.
Rock bottom.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would often then sort of convince myself that, well, I'm okay, I just need to continue with this moderation and, you know, being careful. And but eventually, you know, that just became very tiring for me. And
so what happened then that finally you came to this, I could actually stop altogether?
Yeah. I think that most people who have sort of come to this conclusion, there's a number of factors that were at play that sort of came together around the same time that gave me the agency and the foresight and the clarity, you know, where you can actually just all of a sudden the clouds part and it becomes blindingly obvious that you should have made this decision. So a couple of things happened. One was I was working as a reporter for 5 years and covering a lot of crime, doing a lot of court reporting. And I found that work to be taking a toll on me emotionally and on my mental health. I'd gone through at the same sort of the same time quite a good counseling journey with a counselor that had been really profound for me and healing in a number of ways. And so I felt like I was dissatisfied in my work, and I was wanting to sort of continue on my journey of healing and understanding myself more. And alcohol just didn't fit well into that picture. And I suppose when you spend enough time, you know, covering homicide trials, you realize a couple of things, for me at least. One was that life is very fragile and temporary, in that, you know, we all are sort of here, not to sound grim, but, you know, we have a limited amount of time to make, you know, to live the life we want to live. And then secondly, it was that I just realized I wasn't having the impact that I wanted to have in the world. And so I decided to step away from journalism and do a master's in counseling, which at the time for a lot of people in my life, you know, including me, was a big shock, because I was doing quite well in my career. I had a lot of external affirmation and, you know, it was part of my identity. But I chose to undertake this counseling degree, not really knowing where it would take me or sort of what my life would look like. But as that was at the beginning of 2020, and obviously we went into lockdown and COVID and da da da. But, you know, like most people during COVID, I spent a lot of time thinking about my life and what I wanted life to look like when we were able to emerge from lockdowns. And alcohol became sort of, yeah, very, very obvious to me that something had to change there. Something had to happen. But I didn't know what I should do or how I should do it. So I didn't actually tell anyone or talk to anyone about it. I just kept it quiet between myself and just sort of contemplated the idea of what would it be like if I stopped drinking. I went out for a meal with my wife Brooke and my best friend Jahan, and we were celebrating something. And I remember during that meal that I thought, this may be the last time that I drink. And I didn't say anything, but I just had my two glasses of red wine and, yeah, sort of in my own way said goodbye to alcohol then. But didn't tell anyone, didn't say anything to Brooke. the week later, Brooke and I went to Queenstown. And usually on our holidays, Brooke's not a drinker. Usually on our holidays, you know, I would have a couple of beers or whatever. And but I said to her before we went down, I'm not going to drink this weekend. And she was really stoked by that, which was probably a good indication that something was wrong. And I read your book in like a day and a half, just sat on the couch and read your book. And by the end of it, I just knew that I would never drink again, essentially, and I had to make the call. And so I went out for a walk with Brooke that afternoon, and I said to her, this is what I'm thinking. And yeah, she got really emotional about, you know, the prospect of a life without alcohol. And I just knew, you know, if it meant that much to her, then it was definitely going to happen.
A good emotional, not an upset.
Yeah, a very good emotional.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. She was like, oh, the fun's going to stop. I love your story, Tommy, and it's making me feel quite emotional myself, and that may be because I'm exhausted, but it may also be because, you know, and we hear these stories, and it sounds like, you know, it's a story and you're telling it well, but the feeling when you inhabit those decisions and you move through that, it is so monumental. You actually can't overestimate it. You're making a really huge decision for the rest of your life, you know, to be raw every day and not use that drug that everyone else is using to take the edge off or enhance the celebration or whatever. It is such a big thing. And so, yay for you. I just feel, you know, you've obviously got a huge drive in you to be authentic and to be the best you can be, and to realize that alcohol just wasn't serving you in any way is really special.
Thank you. I mean, I think for those people that, you know, are contemplating giving up alcohol in the early stages, is that, you know, if you do have that clarity and you can sort of, you have a little bit of foresight and you can see that actually this will ultimately add to your life, as scary and as hard as that may feel, you have to just take that opportunity and just run with it. You know, like, I think if you get that moment where you can all of a sudden almost, yeah, see into the future, and that future looks brighter than your current situation, then you just have to trust that vision. There's an email that I found when I was thinking about talking to you. I was wondering if I'd written anything down at the time to sort of jog my memory of how it felt. This is an email I sent to my friend Jahan. It must have been just after I decided. And this is just a part of it. I say, on reflection, I felt this year a growing sense of dissatisfaction when it comes to alcohol. I love having a drink still, but I think deep down I've known that it can't be for me. It is exhausting to always have to be monitoring myself around alcohol and wondering whether there is the possibility that things will escalate. My blowout last month was a good reminder that I will drink to excess in the right circumstances. Moderation this year has been good, but the voice of alcohol has continued to be an enticing force in my life. It feels like I've been walking a dog, which is too strong for me, and it wants to keep running away. I'm sick of walking it, and I just want to let it go and move on to other things. Given all of that, I feel ready to seriously try and stop drinking for good. This is obviously hard for me to read that, because it was, you know, at the time, such an emotional decision. You know, grief, I suppose, is how you sort of feel in those ways.
Yeah, and just fear, because we do live in a culture that celebrates alcohol, and emotions are powerful. And I don't know about you, but I used alcohol to suppress my feelings, and taking it away meant that I couldn't do that anymore. And that was a whole big journey that we don't need to go into now. But I'm really interested in talking to you about, you know, your career change. And I want to start this by asking, did your counsellor, that you said you'd been through your own counselling journey that had been quite profound, did your counsellor ever talk about alcohol with you?
Yeah, he did. And I suppose the difficult thing, right, is that sometimes we struggle to be honest with ourselves. And so in that counselling journey, I don't think I had the insight to actually understand how problematic it was. So we definitely talked about it, and he encouraged me that I should not have alcohol as part of my life. But I didn't quite have the realization then, you know. It was the beginning, I suppose, the sowing of some seeds that you know, a few months later we saw sprout. But it wasn't in the counseling that I decided that I would stop drinking.
And okay, so tell us about your shift to being a counselor yourself. And you said you did a master's of counseling, you went through those 3 years of study, I think it's 3 years, and now you're working as a counselor. How much does your recovery, if you use that word, with your sobriety at least, inform the work you do with others now? And could you imagine yourself doing it if you were still having this internal sort of tug with alcohol? No.
Not at all. And that was a, you know, that was a big motivator as well. When I was studying, I, you know, the first year you don't have any clients face to face. It's in your second and third years that you start to sit down with people and do therapy. And I realized that there was no way that I could, with integrity, sit down with somebody who was struggling in their life and pretend like I had any authority or tell them to do something that I wouldn't do myself. You know, I can only lead people as far as I'm willing to go. And so, yeah, there's no way I could do what I do now if I was drinking. This is hands down no way. In terms of therapy, I mean, therapy has taught me a lot about being sober, and being sober has taught me a lot about therapy, in the sense that, you know, I know when someone comes into my office and we sit down and we talk and they're dealing with addiction, because I've gone through my own journey, I am able to have a level of empathy and insight that I just would not have been able to have. And similarly, because I have had to give up something and the struggle of how that feels and the pressure you feel from other people and the expectations you feel on culture, I also know as a therapist to treat them kindly and gently, and we just take one small step at a time. And yeah, but eventually, you know, all of a sudden they're taking huge strides, which is, so, you know, incredibly rewarding to see.
Are you loving your work as a counsellor?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's no other job like it in my mind. You know, each day I get to sit down with people and hear their story. And, you know, some of those stories are heartbreaking. Some of them are inspiring. You know, but I'm always struck by people's courage to go on a journey of healing and to try and make sense of their life and to try and find ways to forgive and to try and find ways of, you know, working through their trauma or whatever it is. And, you know, I often think at the end of the day, okay, so what actually is therapy? You know, like what happened today? How did it happen? And there's part of it that is me, and then there's part of it that's the client, and then there's this part of it which I feel is just kind of magic, where just something tends to happen. And when you're there when that happens, it's amazing when someone has a breakthrough or an insight, and, you know, those moments are incredibly powerful, and that's the fuel in the tank that keeps me going. Yeah.
There can still be some hesitation from people to go in and sit in a room with someone and talk about their stuff. And, yeah, you know, you do hear stories of, oh, I went to a counsellor and it was terrible. They didn't get, you know, and I always try and say, you know, just because you met with one person, it didn't go well, you know, they probably just weren't the right fit. Try again. But it can be quite hard for people, I think, Tommy, to, one, make the decision and the step to go and spend some time, you know, really unpicking stuff with someone they don't know yet. And then two, to find the right person. What would you say to people who are maybe thinking, I really do need some proper help, you know, unpicking, if that's the way to put it, some stuff that's gone on for me, but they're hesitant?
Yeah. You know, I think therapy is really great. I mean, you know, but you have to, I think first thing is you have to be, I suppose, ready yourself. So if you feel like you're ready, then that's the first step. I don't think sometimes people often come in to see me, you know, occasionally, and they say, I'm here because my wife told me to come. And then I say, well, do you want to be here? And sometimes they'll say no. And then we sort of have to then go, well, is now the right time to sort of start this? Because you can't sort of force someone into a healing journey. So first thing is, if you feel like it's the right time, then that's really awesome. Secondly, what you said is that I always say to a client that's new that, you know, the first session is kind of like trying on a new pair of shoes. You just kind of need to see if this is going to be a good fit. And, you know, a lot of the time people are really comfortable, but sometimes it's just not for whatever reason. And that's totally okay. I think third is, when you go into a session, just be really clear about what you want to talk about. It's your time. And so sometimes as counselors and therapists, we can go quite broad in our approach. And, you know, I always try and remind my clients that you just tell me what it is you want to talk about and we'll focus on that. So sometimes I think that helps to give the client a sense of clarity and feels like they're moving towards their goal and, you know, that kind of thing. So, but overall, particularly if you're early on in your sobriety journey, talking to someone can just be such a help. Not everyone in your life can understand what you're going through, and not everyone's able to have those conversations with you. So if you feel like that's something you need to do, then I'm obviously a huge advocate for it.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about men in New Zealand in particular. You're obviously, or I shouldn't say obviously, but I know you identify as male with using your he, him pronouns. You know, we have a culture of booze in this country, as a lot of Western countries do. But what do you think are the issues for men, particularly with drinking, and the particular pressures or the ways that maybe things are approached between men?
Yeah, and this is something I thought a lot about as I, you know, when you stop drinking, right, you try and just reach out for any resource that's possible. So I was listening to all the podcasts, trying to read all the books and, you know, just to get a sense of how do I get through this. And what I realized was quite early on is a lot of the resources were quite geared towards women, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I think the more resources out there for women, the better. But I do think that in New Zealand, we have a bit of a gap there for resources for men who are thinking about giving up alcohol. I think it's tricky in New Zealand, right? Because we have this still a culture of sort of being macho men, and sort of when we've got problems, we go down to the pub and we have a drink and we sort of talk it out in the context of alcohol. And I've found that tricky as a male to sort of realize that actually a lot of these conversations, these deep and meaningfuls that we have with our mates, often alcohol is involved. And so I think, you know, one of the things I would love to see is more resources, but also men talking more openly. And we're seeing this a little bit more with some high profile people coming out, like Guyon Espiner talking about his journey with alcohol, Patrick Gower. But I think a more nuanced conversation around what it means to talk about our feelings and our emotions without alcohol being in the picture. And also I think just having more awareness that a lot of alcohol advertising is targeted towards males as well. You know, when we think about sports and that kind of thing. So yeah, I hope that as we continue to have this conversation, we can also become more aware in particular and support men that may think that they want to give up alcohol. And yeah, hopefully this conversation is helpful and the other conversations continue to be had.
The paradox with alcohol is that we feel like it bonds us. We use it as a bonding agent. Let's have a drink. We come together, whether it be at pubs or at home, and we use that moment of connection with the booze. And it can feel quite warm and connected, but over, you know, the course of the one drink, two drinks, three drinks, it's doing the opposite. It's putting a shield in between your real raw self, which is where the truth lies, and the other person. And so, you know, I always try and say, and you've probably heard me say this, that you can still meet in the pub, meet in the house, have the drink. The liquid in the glass doesn't have to be that drug that alters the chemicals in your brain. You can still have the bonding moment without that particular liquid, but it's just so embedded that it is seen as the way, and the marketing sells it as well. The mates, you know, the old spates and all the rest of it, marketing really pushes, and it's so hard to shift people's awareness of that. Do you think we're shifting at all with our awareness of how harmful this drug can be and how it disconnects rather than connects?
You know what, I think even in the time that I have been sober, which is sort of 2.5 years, what I have realized is that more people are comfortable with people not drinking. There are more non-alcoholic options available for people. And, you know, that people, I think, are starting to wake up to the idea that alcohol often does not add anything to their life. It tends to only take away. And so I've been pleased and surprised, and my journey has almost become easier as I, you know, have continued, because there's been a more people, yeah, becoming aware of the cost of alcohol. And I think what you said before is really interesting around sort of the emotional side of it, because actually for me, and what I think for a lot of people this is about, is learning to live alongside your emotions in a healthy way. You know, often we turn to alcohol because we just want to take the edge off. And essentially what that means is that we want to somehow numb what we are feeling. And that's a big part of counseling, right? Is, you know, working with my clients and also with myself to learn to live alongside anxiety and to live alongside depression, or, you know, imposter syndrome, or feeling like you're a bad mom. You know, like those feelings, they can come and they can go like the weather. And, you know, it's just about learning to, I suppose, dress for the weather as opposed to change it with this alcohol that may work temporarily, but, you know, long-term and short-term just does not actually, you know, create any benefit.
Oh, you see, this is where your skills as a communicator are really benefiting your work as a counsellor, because being able to say things about emotions being like dressing for the weather instead of trying to change it is just the most beautiful metaphor. Is it a metaphor? It's really powerful, Tommy. Okay, before we close, I could keep talking to you, but I won't on this wet Saturday morning. How are you feeling now looking into a future with no alcohol in it? Do you ever have any moments of like, oh, I won't be able to celebrate my, you know, this, that, or the other in the future without champagne? Or do you have no, you know, what are your thoughts about your future with no alcohol?
You know, I'm so grateful that I made that decision. You know, like every day, I probably, now that I'm sort of 2.5 years in, I take for granted in some ways the decision, because it's just become part of normal life. I think, you know, in that first year, I was just counting each day, then each week, and then, you know, getting through each month, and getting to a year was this huge milestone. I would never go back to alcohol. You know, I would lie if I wasn't saying that there are days where thoughts come into my mind along the lines of, oh, you could just have one, it wouldn't hurt, or, you know, it wasn't ever that bad. And I think that's normal to have those thoughts. And for me, I just return to my values. I return to, you know, who I'm choosing to be in the world, the kind of person that I want to be. And alcohol just can't play a role in that. There's just no way that it adds anything to my life. And I'm not the alcohol police. I still go to pubs and parties, and I have so much fun and enjoy my life. And I'm not, you know, too interested in sort of converting anyone. Although I just sort of think that if I just allow my life to speak volumes, and, you know, I've been privileged to have people in my life cut back on their alcohol or stop drinking, and bring me in on that journey, and that's hugely rewarding as well. So for me, no, alcohol will not play a role in my life going forward, and my life is the better for it. And yeah, it's something that will be part of my legacy, I hope, you know, that I leave, that, yeah, I lived a life of emotional sobriety.
Mic drop, lip gloss drop. Thank you, Tommy.
Can I quickly just say as well, just quickly, for anyone that's just out there that, yeah, is in those hard early days, is that, like, trust that it will get better, because it does. It genuinely does. And find a friend that doesn't drink and buddy up with them, and, yeah, like, listen to podcasts and find something that works for you, whether it's running or walking or drinking tea. And just keep going, because it is totally worth it. And there'll be days where you feel like you can't, but you totally can. There's support out there. Don't be a ghost on Living Sober, you know, post. And yeah, just there's help there and support. So just engage.
Awesome. I'm so pleased I met you. I'm so pleased you rang me up to interview me. That's how we met. Maybe I'll post a link to that article.
Yeah, great.
Oh, no, just great, Tommy. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming, doing Sobriety Chat. Thank you for doing another guest post for us that I will post the link to as well so people can find it. Keep up the great work counselling. If it's okay with you, maybe we could I could share where people could find you as well.
Yeah,
awesome. So big ups to you. Lots of love and bye-bye.
Thanks, Lotta. Thanks so much.